This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, in for Terry Gross. While Bill Gates was making billions of dollars off Microsoft's operating system, Windows, a group of renegade programmers were furiously working on a competing operating system that, when completed, would be given away for free. In 1991, a programmer in Finland named Linus Torvalds wrote the final piece of software, a program he called Linux. Torvalds is part of what is known as the open source movement. In addition to believing that computer software should be given away for free, they also include the source code for their program so that others can adapt and improve it. Over the past 10 years, as this free operating system has been rewritten and refined, it's been adopted by more and more parts of the industry, and it's beginning to challenge Microsoft's dominance. There's a new book about Linux and the open source movement called Rebel Code. Terry Gross spoke recently with its author, British journalist Glyn Moody.
What is Linux?
Linux is, strictly speaking, part of an operating system being the main control software that you find on computers. Most people, though, use the name Linux to refer to the whole operating system. But strictly speaking, this should be called something like GNU Linux. Because it's harder to say, people tend to shorten it to Linux.
And what is the GNU part?
Well, the GNU part, if you like, is the other 90% that goes to make up an operating system. That the Linux, if you like, is the heart. It's strictly speaking called the kernel. And it sits, if you like, in the middle of a great tapestry of software. And that whole tapestry consists of other programs plus Linux. And the other programs have been written by a group of programmers who subscribe to what's called the GNU project.
And we should start with something really basic, which is, what is an operating system?
Okay. When you get your computer, it's basically a piece of metal with plastic and other sort of items in it, but it doesn't do anything until you put some software on it. And at the most basic level, you have to have an operating system which acts as a kind of housekeeper. It looks after the disks when they spin, it puts things up on the screen when you look at it, and it takes things from the keyboard. So all those basic tasks are handled by an operating system. And then on top of that, you will add what are called application programs, which do more specific tasks like word processing or accessing the internet.
What are some of the fundamental differences between the Linux system and, say, the Microsoft system?
Well, you can answer that on two levels. For example, the Linux or the GNU Linux operating system is incredibly robust. Typically, people switch it on and leave it on for years and it never crashes. Whereas anyone who's used Windows will know that crashes, unfortunately, are a rather more common experience. But there's a rather more interesting difference between the two systems, which is that when you buy Microsoft Windows from Microsoft, in fact, you don't buy it, you just get a license to use it. Moreover, you can't actually see what that thing is that you buy. You buy a huge string of zeros and ones, those binary digits. However, when you use Linux or GNU Linux, you actually get the software to keep. It's yours, and you can do what you like with it. Moreover, you can change it. You can look at the underlying lines of programming code, and you can add improvements, or you can convert it into something completely different. So there's a fundamental difference in approach between what Microsoft does and what the people who create Linux and other similar free programs do.
Now, this is what Linus Torvald wanted when he created Linux. He wanted to keep it a free system, and he wanted people to be able to revise it, to debug it, to improve it. Why did he want to keep it free and open to people who wanted to make changes?
Well, initially, he just wanted people to use the program that he'd created, and he was happy for them to do that without paying him. However, he didn't want people turning it into a commercial product and getting rich when he didn't. So he thought it was fair that he would give it away, provided everybody else kept it free. But the magic was that when he did that, and people started sending him suggestions on improving it, and he incorporated those suggestions, his Linux started getting better and better, and he realized that what he'd stumbled upon was a completely new way of writing software, which is that you throw it open in the most general way possible, inviting people to submit their own improvements, and lo and behold, it does get better.
So what was Torvald's approach to preventing other people from making money on the system that he was offering for free?
Well, his initial approach was fairly crude. It just said, if you use this software, you may not make money out of it. And he had a very kind of rough and ready license. But then later on, he adopted something called the GNU, General Public License. And what this is a rather more formally thought out alternative licensing approach, which was first created by somebody called Richard Stallman, who is one of the other key figures in this world. And he specifically wanted to frame a different kind of license that, instead of taking away the rights of users, actually enshrine them. In other words, whereas when you buy software, as I say, you don't actually buy it, you just buy certain rights, which are very circumscribed. But with the GNU GPL, you are actually given rights. Moreover, you have to pass those rights on. So it's a kind of topsy-turvy license. And in fact, it's sometimes known as copyleft, in contradistinction to copyright.
And tell us more about what the license says.
Well, it basically tries to formalize the magic which people like Linus and Richard Stallman himself discovered in this sort of open source way of programming. In other words, if you release something under this particular license, you have to provide the underlying lines of programming code, which, as I said, is not what was done initially. Normally, you are presented with effectively a black box when you get software. You can't see inside how it works. But under the GNU GPL, you must provide the lines of source code, as it's called, the programming code. And in a way, that's providing the keys to the magic, and it's letting people see how things are done. And that was a real sort of breakthrough conceptually, because it was the antithesis of what had been done before. Now, paradoxically, you can actually sell this free software, provided you also make it available free as well. In other words, you have the freedom to sell it, but you must also provide it free. And this really forms the basis
You have the freedom to sell it, but you must also provide it free?
That's right.
Explain that contradiction.
Okay. In other words, you can package it in such a way that people might want to pay you money for it. So, for example, you could put it on a CD, you could provide manuals with it, you can sell it through, I don't know, computer magazines, for example. But you must provide a copy somehow that people can get hold of for free. And typically, you would do that by placing a copy on the internet so people can download that copy. Moreover, if they buy your program, they also have the right to copy it and give it to their friends, unlike what you tend to find in the commercial world.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the open source movement and another character in that movement, Richard Stallman, who is behind GNU. Tell us who Richard Stallman is.
Richard Stallman is a very remarkable individual in that he more or less started this single-handed back in 1984. He was one of the gifted young programmers at MIT during the 1970s, and he was happily sort of programming away when various events caused his, if you like, Eden of programming to disappear, in that all of the fellow programmers disappeared and they went to work for companies. The machine that he was using was taken away because it was getting old-fashioned. And he was so sort of deeply struck by this particular event that he resolved to single-handedly, if need be, create again this paradise that he'd enjoyed. And the way he was going to do that was by writing his own complete operating system, which is what this GNU is. And so back in 1984, he started piecing together, tiny part by tiny part, this entire operating system. And what's interesting is that he almost finished it, but there was one big piece missing, which is this so-called kernel. And it just so happened that Linus in Finland was creating just that missing piece in the early 90s. And when you put those two together, the GNU and the Linux, you get this complete free operating system that Richard Stallman has been striving for since 1984.
Well, you mentioned a little bit about his motivation for wanting to keep his system free. What were Stallman's other motivations for wanting to keep the system free?
Well, it's important to note that he uses the word free in the sense of freedom, not in the sense of costing nothing, because remarkably, he sees free software as an instrument of liberation. In other words, he thinks that by releasing free software to people, he increases their liberty. And really, this is a facet of his very strongly held beliefs in terms of empowering people. So he sees it almost as a political act.
Is he concerned about people co-opting his software?
He was very concerned about it, which is why he invented the GNU GPL that we talked about earlier, because this makes it impossible to co-opt. But you're absolutely right. That was the danger, that he would create this wonderful software and somebody would come and say, thank you very much, I'm now going to sell this for $1,000. So he spent a lot of time talking to lawyers and came up with this truly innovative document, because, as I say, in effect, it turns conventional licensing on its head. to ensure that his creations would remain free for all people for all time.
When a system like Linux is not only free, but the source code is available to anyone who wants access to it, does it make it easier for somebody with the know-how to sabotage the Linux system?
Well, there are two schools of thought on this. Those who come from the more traditional software background indeed say that this makes it extremely vulnerable to people infiltrating the software and to including malicious programs. But those who are, if you like, more attuned with the whole open approach point out that if the software is open, then you can more readily spot any problems with it. And indeed, that's been shown the case over the last few years when many commercial programs have been found to have so-called backdoors, in other words, hidden capabilities that nobody knew about, and there was no way end users could ever find out about them. Similarly, some of these free programs have had problems found too, but they've been found before they've been exploited.
Glenn Moody's book about Linux is Rebel Code. We'll hear more of Terry Gross's interview with him after the break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry Gross's interview with Glenn Moody. He writes about computers and is the author of the new book Rebel Code, Inside Linux and the Open Source Revolution.
Okay, so we've talked about two very bright, very creative people who have made very important systems available for free, Richard Stallman and Linus Torvald. What do they do to make money?
Well, they are a complete contrast in that respect. Linus Torvalds is very much a pragmatist, and he actually works for a company which makes proprietary devices. It's called Transmeta. It's down in Silicon Valley. And interestingly enough, they've come up with a way of producing a chip which is essentially compatible with the Intel chip family. And Linus has been very involved with this. It's interesting to note that it's not directly involved with Linux. And I think the reason for that is his primary motivation for most things is the challenge. And he wanted to do something that was really quite different from what he'd already done in the preceding 10 years. So he is an engineer. He has the standard stock options, which have made him quite a wealthy man. He is married. He has three children. He drives quite a fast car. So he is sort of Mr. Normal in that respect. Richard Stallman, by contrast, doesn't work. That's to say, he devotes all of his time to programming to a lesser extent, and nowadays more to promoting and evangelizing his ideas. And he's able to do this in part because he was the winner of a so-called MacArthur Genius Prize some years ago, which gave him a sizable lump of money which he has invested to give him that freedom. So he is the antithesis in some respects of Linus, who is much more worldly.
A lot of our listeners will never have used the Linux system. What kind of computers does Linux operate on?
Well, the Linux kernel and the GNU Linux operating system runs on practically every computer that there has ever been, from the mightiest IBM supercomputer down to the Palm Pilot. Because one of the things that the people who create this software really enjoy is a challenge. And one of the greatest challenges is what's called porting, which is taking the GNU Linux system and making it work on new hardware. And therefore, there are people at this very moment who are creating new versions of GNU Linux to run on just about any computer system you can name. However improbable, they regard that as a challenge to be met.
Do you think at this point in the history of GNU Linux that the only people who can successfully use it are people who really understand the source code and who are computer experts and experts in computer language?
I don't think you have to understand the source code, but I think it is fair to say that you need to have a fair degree of computer expertise. And the reason for that is the power of this kind of software derives in great part from its flexibility. But as we know, flexibility can be a problem for people who don't want flexibility. And I think that it's going to be a few years before you see GNU Linux systems turning up regularly on the desktop. But it's important to remember that 3 or 4 years ago, people said, well, you'd never find GNU Linux in business, whereas the latest market research indicates quite clearly that it is already the second most important operating system after Windows. And just recently, Steve Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft, said to an analyst meeting that he regards Linux as the most serious threat to his company. So it has progressed from something that nobody took seriously in companies to being the most serious threat to Windows in companies. And I think the same will happen in due course, perhaps in 4 or 5 years' time on the desktop too.
Now, Linux is a free system, but IBM and Hewlett-Packard are now working with Linux. What are the relationships between Linux and these, you know, very corporate, very profit-making companies?
Well, it's certainly been a very interesting and important development. Last year, IBM announced a massive vote of support for Linux, and this year I think they've announced they'll be investing $1 billion in supporting Linux further. Now, clearly, they don't do this out of altruism. And the reason they're doing this is because it solves a major problem for them. If you look at the IBM line of hardware, they have supercomputers, they have what are called mainframes, the very big pieces of iron that do the main sort of number crunching. They have mini computers, they have PCs. And hitherto, those have all been completely incompatible. It was very difficult to get them to talk to one another. It was impossible to get one program that ran on one to run on another. Now, along comes GNU Linux, which they are porting, in other words, transferring to all of their hardware. What happens now? If you write a program that runs on your PC running GNU Linux, that same program will run on a mini computer. That same program will run on a mainframe. It will even run on a supercomputer. You don't need to change a line of code. So, at a stroke, it unifies their product line.
Has IBM and Hewlett-Packard found a way to make money on Linux, or are they just using Linux to make their own operation easier?
Well, they're certainly using it to make their operation easier. They're also using it, quite frankly, for tactical reasons, because anything that is a problem for Microsoft is clearly an advantage for them. But there are sound business reasons why they should back it, because IBM in particular was moving increasingly towards a service revenue model rather than producing hardware, rather than producing just software. In other words, you effectively give somebody the razor and then you sell them the razor blades on top. And what this amounts to is giving them the software, in other words, GNU Linux, and then providing plenty of consultancy, plenty of support. In fact, all those things which hitherto Linus and all his brilliant programmers haven't provided. So in fact, there's a wonderfully complementary relationship between the open source movement and big companies like IBM and HP and Compaq, who can now provide those things which were absent from the early days of the open source movement.
Like service, so that if something goes wrong, there's an expert you can call in from a company.
Exactly.
And they'll help you fix it.
You provide 24/7 backup. In other words, mm-hmm. every hour of every day, somebody will be on call. And hitherto, that hasn't been available, and people have used that against open source, saying, well, the software's all very well, but what happens when it goes wrong? Who do I call? The answer is you call IBM, you call HP, you call Compaq. And they're finding that there are good revenues to be made there.
Do you think that the Linux system is a threat to Microsoft? Now, I ask that. I know the judge in the Microsoft antitrust case, Judge Thomas Penfield, didn't seem to think that it was, and he said there weren't any viable alternatives to Windows. He also said that Linux was a fringe operating system that's unlikely to challenge Microsoft.
Well, with all due respect to the judge, I think that was true 3 or 4 years ago, but it manifestly isn't true now. I've already quoted what Steve Ballmer said. I mean, if he says it is the main threat to Microsoft, he is not a man to exaggerate. The market research reports make it quite clear that the GNU Linux system is rapidly catching up with Windows in the server field. It's true that on the desktop, as I said before, GNU Linux still has a long way to go, but it will get there. It has this sort of slow, steady progress. So I think it already is a very serious threat. And it's very interesting that just recently, one or two Microsoft executives have started suggesting that perhaps Linux has peaked and perhaps it won't be around much longer. Now, this is a dramatic change from their previous stance, which was that nobody was using it and therefore it didn't really matter. So I think that their actions speak louder than words in the sense that they are clearly worried.
Would the Linux system be strong against that attack if it caught on? Because
everybody's Linux system is different. Everybody
can
tweak it.
Because people personalize it, right.
That's right.
And they customize it.
And also, for example, you wouldn't just have one email client. There is no Outlook for Linux. There are sort of 10 different ones. And therefore, when the virus arrived on your PC running Linux, it wouldn't know what to do because it couldn't assume that you had one program.
There seem to be two extremes in the software movement. On the one hand, you have people who become gazillionaires because they write programs that are so successful. And on the other hand, you have the people in the open source movement who write wonderful programs, but they think that the programs should be free. Is there any middle ground?
I mean, I suppose there is, but I think that contrast is important because personally what I see is that free software and open source represent a contrast to the whole kind of dot-com philosophy that we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years, and which I think now a lot of people are regarding as discredited. This kind of at all costs, get rich quick and just worry about the IPOs. I think people are starting to realize that that perhaps isn't what life is about. And the values inherent in the open source and free software world, the values of sharing, the values of generosity, I think are going to make a comeback. And in many ways, my book is about the next phase, if you like, within the computer world.
Well, Glenn Moody, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Glenn Moody's new book is Rebel Code, Inside Linux and the Open Source Revolution. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.